Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the third Monday of each month, it is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello there.
This is so great. I always love and look forward to the show because there's nothing better than really becoming your best. And,
yes.
And that's the key, whether it's in relationships, whether it's in your profession, being a parent, being a great spouse, there's nothing better to learn how to reach your full potential.
Yes, exactly.
And this is what the topic is today. But before we get to the topic, the rain. Where did the rain come from? I didn't even know it was supposed to rain today.
Well, when I was driving to the studio, I thought to myself, wow, I forgot. Arizona drivers, I need to add 15 minutes to my drive time.
At least.
Because it just, people just freak out.
Yeah, they don't know how to drive in the rain because it doesn't rain here very often, really,
unless it's a torrential downpour.
Yeah.
You know, and then everybody pulls over. And then people drive in that rain.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but not this rain.
Yeah, yeah. The light rain,
the little
they
drizzle,
don't know.
What,
yeah, it's amazing to me. So, yeah, that's right. So it does delay things quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you made it.
I did. Well, after I saw, you know, somebody rear-end a bus, which was
really,
my goodness, I felt terrible for that person. What?
You mean like a school bus?
No, a city bus.
Oh, a city bus?
Yes.
Oh, they probably bounced off, right?
Well, I don't know. Their car was pretty damaged.
Oh, no.
And so they seemed okay. I saw them calling on the side of the road, and there was all these police. And I just thought, now that would really mess up your day.
Yeah.
I felt terrible for that person.
Oh, man. Well, if that person is listening, call in today, and we'll cheer you up, of course. So this is great. You are so great at what you do. Maybe give us a little background for the new listeners on exactly who is Cynthia Hyatt.
Well, thank you. I'm a licensed professional. Psychotherapist is what I do, and I've done that for about 20 years now. And I do mainly adults and individuals and couples counseling as well. And I do all the major disorders. You know, we have depression, anxiety, and many of the traumatic disorders, that derive from sexual abuse, emotional abuse, these types of things, the family of origin issues, children of alcoholics, codependency, those types of things.
That's quite a list.
Right, right.
But, you know, the more the better, because that way you can help assist the healing process.
Absolutely.
Which is very important.
Well, and it is important, you know, this is a sidelight, but many times for people in therapy, we need to be differentiating between what are clinical disorders and what are emotional, relational, learned disorders.
Well, tell us about that. I find that fascinating. What is the difference?
Well, usually a clinical disorder is going to be something that might be able to be medicated. So, meaning the depression cluster, the anxiety cluster, those that, you know, anxiety has generalized anxiety disorder, social phobias, obsessive compulsive disorder, these types of things. ADHD, you know, is its own, and that can be certainly medicated. The depression areas. Now, many times with those, though, we have superimposed upon it possibly trauma. And so where we may be wanting to make sure the person with an underlying clinical issue, which may be genetic in nature, and we know that depression and anxiety is sometimes passed through genes, that we medicate that because many times that can create then a relational disorder. Because it changes the way that we relate to people. It changes the way we perceive ourselves and our identity, gives us maladaptive coping skills, and many of those things are going to get in the way of optimally being our own best version and relating to people in the way that we is best able to produce the intimacy that we desire.
So is alcohol, would that be clinical or emotional?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question because many of the addictive disorders many times are genetic in nature to one degree or another.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that just because you have that gene, similar to cancer, that you're going to all of a sudden have that happen. But there is going to be maybe a predisposition like there is with depression and anxiety. And so alcoholism, where that is a behavioral problem and certainly a spiritual problem and certainly a relational problem, there is a genetic nature to that. However, it would be nice if we had pills that would eradicate addictions But, you know, then there are some medications that can support that healing of that addiction, but the addiction still has to be addressed behaviorally.
So the treatments are different, whether it's clinical versus emotional.
Right.
Do you deal with both?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Wow. So that's interesting. And is there one that has different statistics on facilitating the healing? Is medication better? Well, I guess it's not better. It just depends on the circumstance.
I think what you're wanting to think about is, because of how complicated individuals are, I may see somebody, and as I'm talking to them, you know, doing an intake and understanding what's happening with them, they may want to say to me, isn't there a medication that can help me with this? So there are sometimes when I would say to somebody, there isn't a pill that can fix this one, right?
Yeah.
Then there are some people that I say, you know, we really need to get you on some medication, because if I don't get you on some medication, you're not going to be able to learn the new thinking skills, the new coping skills, the new behavioral skills that you need. And so the best way that I explain it to clients, and hopefully this will translate over the airwaves because it's kind of visual. You have to visually think of a laptop computer and then yourself. And so the laptop computer is like your brain. Now, when you do an antidepressant, which is a non-addictive medication, it's kind of like the computer, the geek guy coming into the directly dealing with your computer, fixing your computer, because we all know that when our computer doesn't work, we have big emotional feelings.
Oh, yeah.
So if my computer doesn't work, I might get depressed, I might get anxious, I might get angry, I might get frustrated, you know. So like an antidepressant goes straight to the brain, and then you feel better. So it is not a mood-altering medication. Now, it does alter our mood because our brain is working the way it's supposed to, and when our brain works, we feel better. Our life works better. So the other, you know, scenario is with addictive substances, many times people say, you know, the computer's not working, so I'll just drink a beer. And then it won't matter what I put into the computer because I feel better because I'm not dealing with the computer. Narcotics, many times that are mood altering, are going directly to you. And so you feel better while we try to get your brain doing what it needs to be doing.
Oh, so medication is really sort of a step to the whole process
exactly.
to help.
So many times when you have medication for someone that has got anxiety, it's kind of like anxiety medications are addictive substances. So we do give them like to the person, if we go back to this analogy with the computer being our brain. Because if you have a super anxious person, what do they do with their computer? They keep hitting the button all the time, right?
Yeah.
And they're putting all the wrong information and they're freaking out. And so we give them some anti-anxiety, they calm down and we say, now, what do we want to put into the computer? How do we want to perceive the information from the computer? So there's different reasons why we're, you know, addressing it from different directions. But
that makes a lot of sense. So instead of getting mad at the computer, they can learn how to use
exactly.
the computer.
Exactly. Or we find out, wow, did I get a computer that has some hard drive issues? You know, that may be genetic. Did I get a computer that, like many of us in our family of origin, our parents installed programs that we didn't
that's
really
right.
want installed?
Yeah.
So there's an installation that's running all the time underneath. It's not even on the desktop. Right? So it's the same with learned behaviors or relational disorders. It's like, wow, that's my mom, that's my dad. And that's like an installation that when you go into therapy, we're doing cognitive behavioral therapy, we're uninstalling a program.
And maybe using the right program for once. Instead
exactly.
of trying to use
exactly.
Excel to write a document, you use Word.
Exactly.
Oh, I love that
yes,
analogy.
Yes.
Oh, you should put that in like a book or something.
Oh, yeah, you think? That's
oh,
yeah, that
I,
is,
like
I like
that,
that
analogy.
Yes,
yeah.
That is a good analogy. It works
no,
really well.
I like
well.
Your analogy. You like mine and I like yours. Okay.
With the way that people think these days and the way that technology is, you really can understand a lot of the human psyche.
Yeah.
You know, and it is very
sense.
Technological, the way that our brain is hardwired. So.
You know, it's funny because, you know, most people know I do neuro-linguistic programming, and the co-founder, Richard Bandler, was a computer guy. And
oh, I didn't know that.
He sort of equated the
yes,
human mind
yes.
with the computer.
Well, it's very similar, you
so
know.
So interesting,
yes.
right?
It is electric, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's electrifying
yes,
even.
Yes,
oh.
it is.
Well, this is a good analogy and a good way to visually to really understand the human
right.
brain.
Because I think it often helps people to understand why, you know, to not be so averse to medications. Because many times I'll say, like clients, well, I don't want it to change who I am. And what I say to them is, if you're doing an antidepressant and that's what your brain needs, you are able to become really who you are.
Yeah.
And so that's what antidepressants do. And the other thing is I say to people, you know, your brain is an organ like any other organ in your body. So you're willing to do insulin if you're diabetic because your pancreas isn't working.
Right.
You're willing to do heart medications. You're willing to, but your brain, I say to people, do you ever see brains floating to heaven? Okay, your brain is not you. Your mind is in your brain. Your brain is not you. So if your brain isn't working, you cannot express the essence of who you are.
God, I love that. You always come up with great book titles. Brains Floating to Heaven. I could see the movie right now. Brains Floating to Heaven.
There you go.
Wow, this is very good. So today's a great show, as always, and we're going to talk about Be Your Own Best Version.
Yes.
Which is so, so important. You know, from my perspective, it's like, especially in the dating scene, this is a sort of a dating show, match, no match, about relationships, whether you know someone, whether you have someone, whether you want to find someone. But unless you're your best version,
yes,
you're going to attract who you really are. It's
That's
a
right.
law of attraction.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about your best version.
Well, being your own best version, the reason that I like that or coined that phrase and use that is because it's always going to be changing and revising, but it's still original. So we're not changing who you are innately, but we are continually progressing and growing. The same way that, you know, Microsoft is always coming out with, you know, updates.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're updating ourselves on an ongoing basis so that we can become truly who we originally were intended to be. Because I think that, you know, spiritually there is a creator that had created us with an original intention. And one of the things that, you know, our genetics or the world that we live in or our experiences many times will take away from that, and we start adding on to ourselves things that maybe aren't originally us, and we lose the sense of who we truly are, which then when we go to try to relate to people, we're relating to them from a maladaptive state, or we're relating to them through a projected version of who we think we should be, could be, would be, ought to be, instead of who we truly are.
You know, that totally makes sense. It reminds me of a couple things. One is, it's almost like having a virus scan. Everyone has a
yes.
virus scan
yes.
on your computer. And there's a reason for that, because your computer won't work very well.
That's exactly
right.
In
fact,
right.
it could get shut down totally. And even worse, it could send out bad stuff to
exactly.
other your friends.
Exactly.
And that's what the virus scan. So being your own best version, part of it, I suspect, is mm-hmm. knowing how to self-virus yourself.
Absolutely.
Or self,
Absolutely.
Whatever that's
do,
called.
Do a virus scan, yes, yeah, so that you understand, is this really who I am? And am I really authentically expressing and living out my best potential?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Another thing that strikes me to this whole concept is really transforming resistance and obstacles and fears that hold you back.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like people are covered with these obstacles or poor me or beliefs that don't serve them well. They sort of negotiate the worst case on behalf of themselves versus, wait a minute, you know, look forward. And how do you really transform these obstacles into allies?
Absolutely.
And by doing that, that you create a path, don't you, for
well,
your
if
best
you go,
self?
Yes. Well, if you go back to the you know, computer analogy that we're going to be using this whole entire 2 hours.
Yes.
If you go back to, you know, how many times have you had someone that is a better that is a computer guru, and they say, well, your computer can do this, you just didn't know it.
Yeah.
Or you're using that wrong program.
That's right.
You know, or we can create a shortcut for you, you know, or all these types of things that you know, what I was afraid of maybe in my computer because I didn't know what it was or how to do it, or maybe I attempted it at one point and it, you know, went awry. You know, part of understanding those things that get in the way many times are what I'm sending out, for one.
That's right.
You know, and it's also the way that I'm perceiving what's coming at me, and then how I maybe am using an antiquated version of me to try to deal with a current, more, you know, recent or more complicated issue.
Well, it totally makes sense. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Cynthia. Cynthia. Where did I get Cynthia? Cynthia Hyatt. I don't even know if that's such a word.
That's
Cynthia.
Okay, because many times I get Cynthia. I get Cynthia often. I don't even know
such a word, Cynthia. I must be like channeling or something. Anyway, we'll be right back with Cynthia Hyatt. Match, no match.
Are you a able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt, not Cynthia. I still can't believe, Kurt, what does Cynthia mean? Is that like rhymes with India? Okay, anyway, Cynthia Hyatt, and this is Match No Match. We've been talking about be your own best version. This is so critical. And what's one of the first steps here? Where do people start?
I think if you think of it, when I'm talking and teaching to people about being your own best version, what we're looking at is there are three core beliefs or truths or that I have found withstand the test of time and are what we would call a construct. So it's something that is a staid paradigm. So the first one is, my belief in this whole entire process is that you are alive for a reason. And many times we forget that. We think that it's happenstance somehow. That, oh, I just was arrived on the planet. I just, came out of my mother and, who knows why I'm here or what the purpose is. And many times we don't even take time to figure that out.
And a lot of people think it's because to drink beer and watch sports.
Well, because that would go to one of the other truths is that would be alleviating pain.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes. A distraction
of
life itself.
Exactly.
Holy moly, that's tough.
So
and Kurt's cracking up for some reason.
So it's really realizing that, wow, I'm created for a purpose. God really did not just arbitrarily throw together a whole bunch of DNA and wonder what he got.
That's right.
It's like the whole point of it is if we're a created being and we're not something that just occurred, that we are truly, there is design. There is truly phenomenal, complex design in each person. And when you think about that, everyone is unique. I say to people, you're the only one of you that will ever occur. There will never be another one like you. There never has been one like you. So when I talk to people about understanding themselves, one of the things that really helps is to realize there's no reason to compare. I can't compare myself to something that's not like me.
That's a good point.
And so I only can compare myself to myself.
Thus, be your own best version.
Exactly.
It blends in nicely.
And so am I better than I was yesterday?
So what are some of the responses you get? We're talking still the first step is you're alive for a reason, and God's really created you for some purpose.
Yes, uniquely only you can do.
Yeah. Do you get different responses? Like, do some people say, well, I don't have a unique part of me.
Absolutely.
And what do you tell people? Because people really do have a unique purpose.
Well, you can just say to them simply, your whole way of looking at what I'm presenting you is unique to you.
That's
right. It's understanding that even relationships, those living organisms of relationship are unique. So the relationship I have with you is unique. It cannot be repeated with anybody else because it's made by two very unique things, you and me.
That's right.
And it can't be repeated because we're the only one with those variables.
So that's an important part to start at that premise because I suspect if people can't really accept that,
right,
then step two and three might be tough.
Right. See, because understanding that you're created for a reason, one can give you either tremendous hope, or it can also, if you don't look at it appropriately, there's responsibility that you may not want.
That's right. And I would think, too, when you accept step one, is that you're going to be more excited to find what your passion
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. Well, and it certainly makes life worth living.
Oh, it does.
Otherwise.
Gives it meaning, right?
Well, absolutely. And if you don't have meaning and purpose, you know, there's this great proverb. I wouldn't say it's a proverb. It can be seen as a proverb. It's not one of the proverbs.
Right.
Okay. It's a different part in the Bible that says, you know, without vision, the people perish. And really, what many of the translations are saying is without vision, the people lack restraint, which is phenomenal. If you think about that, when people don't have vision, they don't have meaning, they don't have purpose, then what's the point? They lack restraint. Eat, drink, and be merry. Tomorrow we shall die. Who cares? Oh. So I live however I want to live because there's no point. But see, if I understand there's vision, there's purpose, there's meaning, that everything that I do matters, then, wow, my whole life takes on a whole entire different paradigm. All of a sudden, it matters how I act. It matters how I think. It matters how I interact with even strangers, because all of those things are directly affecting this bigger picture.
And that could be a part of someone's purpose, how you leave people off when you
absolutely.
Interact with them.
That's exactly right.
And so, you know, it's a great exploration.
See, that point in and of itself, many times I will say to people, the research that they have done on individuals that have, like, made it from dire circumstances, like the young Black American kid that was in the ghetto and he made it to Harvard. These people that make it out of these horrible situations, you know, a terribly dysfunctional family, a foster family, anyone that you ask can always trace back one person in their life that interacted with them in a way that gave them hope.
Mm.
And it could just be one interaction. That one interaction was the turning point. And so I say to people, you know what? What if you are the one interaction for one person that gets them off on a different direction?
You know, and I've read some of those stories, like mm-hmm. Louise Hay mm-hmm. is fantastic, Wayne Dyer.
Yes.
And some others, even Tony Robbins talks about it, where if things happen to you, and especially mm-hmm. Louise Hay, she had a very traumatic childhood, very full of abuse. And her thought process was either I can make this a gift
mm-hmm.
so I can help other people not, you know,
right.
to heal from similar circumstances or to avoid it, mm-hmm. or I could say poor me.
Absolutely.
And so it makes all the difference which way and what direction you want to go.
That's right. That's right.
A gift or poor me.
That's right. And so we all have a tremendous opportunity to be somebody that, even if I'm not the person that actually gets them off in the right direction, but maybe I'm the person coupled with other interactions that causes them not to go in the wrong direction, but to actually find more meaning and purpose. And it was simply because I was kind to them.
Yeah.
Maybe I was just nice to them. Maybe I showed them a different way of relating.
Or just accepted them for who
absolutely.
They are.
Absolutely.
Forgave them, perhaps.
Absolutely.
There's so many ways that people can get right into this. And is there a question, or is it a series of other exploration and maybe tools and techniques in therapy that you can help people that really don't have any clue what their purpose is? Is there other ways to guide them? Is it just sort of some type of time frame in which to guide them?
Well, it is a self-discovery. But usually what I say to people is, if we really believe that there's a creator with a divine plan that created me for a specific reason, then who best to ask who that is and who
gotcha.
I am? So if I just simply say, you better tell me, because I can't figure this out. I'm the created thing. I'm not the creator. Now, I'm highly creative, and I can create all kinds of things, but I can't create something out of nothing.
So really, it's letting go.
Mm-hmm. And saying, tell me, I want to know, who am I? Why am I here? What's the point?
Rather than pounding the table and saying, I can't figure this out. Well,
or
maybe you're not meant to figure it out.
Or making it happen.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, it's such a shortcut for me. If I simply say, okay, before I start to go off determining what my destiny is, and determining who I am and how I should be and what I'm going to make happen, why don't I ask the thing that created me what the whole point is?
I love it. That makes sense. It makes it a lot easier.
Well, and then it's that step of faith or trust or however you want to look at it that you're actually going to hear.
Yeah.
And what I say to people is, if you are truly asking, you will hear.
And maybe that is people's purpose, is just to learn to let go.
Absolutely.
So that's how easier, you know, it can't get much easier than
that. Exactly.
I think people make life too hard, don't they?
We do, because it is hard.
Yeah.
And so life is hard.
Yeah.
You know, we know that from Scott Peck.
That was,
you know,
his very first sentence.
Line. That's right.
Life is difficult. Life I remember. That's
right.
The only book I remember
line. This is what I always say to clients, you know, when they're lamenting over the way life is. And I understand, because I haven't had, you know, nobody leaves this planet without a story.
Yeah, okay? That's true.
So I always say to them, listen, we have to remember, you know, you're describing heaven. This is not heaven.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just get that right off the table. Let's just understand this whole idea. This is not heaven. This is never going to be heaven. This is made up of a bunch of mistake-making people. Therefore, we cannot have heaven here. Now, inside of me, maybe I can get pieces of that, which then translate outside of me, which is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
So maybe I can help get some of that created here. But overall, this is tough. We're learning.
Yeah.
And learning is about mistakes. And I can't learn if I don't make mistakes.
And Scott Peck, by the way, The Road Less Traveled.
Absolutely.
Is the book.
That's right.
A great book.
That's exactly
Give me some
right.
knuckles.
The
you
Road
read
Less,
that too,
That's
huh?
right. The Road Less Traveled.
That's
yes.
a very good book.
They're, oh,
I like
so
it.
Divinely inspired. It's
yeah.
amazing. It really is.
Very, very nice book. Mm-hmm. And so we only have like a minute before our next break, but let's say what the second step is.
And well, the second one is understanding that you can affect change in yourself and the world around you. Because many times we feel impotent. You know, our life isn't working, and so we just feel like it doesn't matter what I do. We go back to, without vision, the people lack restraint.
And wherever the wind blows, there
That's right.
I am.
That's yeah. right. So it really doesn't make any difference. So we just end up being in this feeling state that everything is happening to me, and I just need to react. I just need to deal with it. I just need to survive it. Instead of understanding that, no. Yes, things happen to me, but things are happening to me, and I'm also doing things to people, places, and things.
That's right, and meaning be proactive, but also maybe even more than that is the one thing you can always control is your interpretation of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that empowering?
Well, and that's, you know, Viktor Frankl's book, you know, Man's Search for Meaning.
Excellent book.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
can you imagine? In fact, maybe when we come back from our break, we should
powerful.
Talk about that
oh,
book a little.
Oh, my goodness. Amazing.
That is an excellent book, because you won't believe what you're going to hear next on an individual under unbelievable circumstances,
yes.
how
the
he
Holocaust.
Could have survived. No
yes.
doubt about it. Great book. And you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt. I said that right this time. I'm so proud of myself. And we'll be right back with more Be Your Own Best Version on Match No Match.
KXXT.
Are you suffering from pain in joints, whether from arthritis, osteoporosis, stiffness, or old sports injuries? You can be pain-free with BioVaxin Joint Free. Don't settle for pain. Call 800-288-1961. That's 800-288-1961. BioVaxin Joint Free comes in a 100% delicious natural liquid, which gives you the highest absorption versus generic pill forms with low absorption rate. Because of its quadruple action ingredients, many people experience pain-free results within 48 hours. BioVaxin Joint Free increases joint mobility, decreases joint stiffness, and nourishes your joints with the highest grade glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, hyaluronic acid, and all of your essential minerals and amino acids. Restore your joints, save your bones. Without mobility, we have no life. Conquer your pain once and for all. Call now for your free bottle when you get to. Call BioVaxine at 800-288-1961. That's 800-288-1961.
Hi, this is Steve Rundle from Dwellings Realty Group. Is your home underwater? Are you considering, or have you already missed a mortgage payment? Do you have questions about your options and the differences between a short sale and a foreclosure? If so, I strongly encourage you, call Dwellings Realty Group today at 480-629-8136. Dwellings Realty Group is a locally owned, full-service real estate brokerage that specializes in educating our clients in short sales, loan workouts, foreclosures, and additional options that may be available to you based on your individual circumstances. You owe it to yourself to call today for a free consultation and let us walk you through the best option for you in regards to your home so that you can rest easy tonight. Again, if you find yourself asking any of these questions, the next step would be to call me, Steve Rundle, at 480-629-8136. or www.dwellingsaz.com. Like the great Kenny Rogers said,
you got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up.
On the web at familyvaluesradio.net. This is 1010 KXXT.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match starring Cynthia Hyatt. We've been talking about Be Your Own Best Version. We've named some incredible books like The Road Less Traveled by Scott Peck. And the last one we mentioned was Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. What an amazing book. And little did we know, our own producer, Kurt, actually met Viktor Frankl.
Which is phenomenal.
That is amazing.
You know, Viktor Frankl is a very famous Jewish psychiatrist that lived through the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And the way that he lived through the Holocaust was he developed what's called logotherapy. And that's you know, he had school after that and all these types of things, but it really came down to that what his discovery was, what his insight or the way he managed the Holocaust was, nobody could control what he thought.
Incredible.
It was his mind, his internal world was his. They could do whatever they wanted outside. They could do whatever they wanted to his body. Whatever they could do, but they could not control his mind.
And, you know, he had a purpose there. I remember reading in the book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, that his purpose to survive was so that he can write about this so this would never, ever happen again in the world.
And the most egregious thing to me is that people are trying to talk people out of the Holocaust. I can't even take it. I can't even believe that individuals would be saying it never happened.
Really?
Oh, there's a whole movement.
Well, I heard about that. Mm-hmm. Why is that, you think? Well, I mean, what's up with that? I've heard this too.
Well, that would be more of a spiritual concept.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
That would be about good and evil and all kinds of things, and evil wanting to eradicate, you know, meaningful things that produce such powerful goodness out of such bad.
Oh.
Yes, and so it's like, let's minimize that. Let's minimize it to the point that let's just talk everybody out of it and pretend like it never happened.
So that's the movement.
It's horrible.
There's actually some well-known people that...
are buying into it, yes.
Yeah, and relatives of well-known people. I don't know if I should mention any names. I probably won't. But this particular gentleman's been in the news a lot. Okay, but anyway, other than that... yeah, it's a great book, and I remember also in the book he said, you know, if you're in that situation, you know, in a concentration camp or whatever, you know, I think a lot of people can really give up hope very quickly.
Absolutely.
But you know, he saw something positive out of that, and one of the quotes in the book he said was, you know, well, let's put it this way before I say this, is that you could probably lose sight of God sometimes in that situation.
Well, when there's that much evil.
Yeah, and he said often to himself, he said, well, thank you, God. You know, he actually thanked God for not making me like them. I mean, that was a great
insight
in the book.
Yes, that I'm not these people that have given themselves over to evil, that I'm not doing evil atrocities. I'm not one of them.
Incredible, right? I mean, what mindset is that?
Well, see, and that's a phenomenal mindset because I use that many times in therapy when I say, well, do you want to be one of them or do you want to be one of us?
Oh, there you go.
So who do you want to be?
Wow.
So if you want to be one of us, you better act like one of us because they oftentimes try to act like us, but they don't want to do the work to be like us.
And that's the key, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
To do the work.
So you can fake it for a while. But if you haven't done the work to be a decent person, if you haven't done the self-examination and the willingness to be humble and to ask for forgiveness when you need to be and to be truly walking in a way that says, I receive forgiveness, that means I'm going to change. So I'm not just taking it cheaply and saying, thanks for forgiving me and I'm going to keep doing what I was doing.
That's right, and getting past your ego,
which is an issue. So those people can act like one of us. But they aren't one of us if they don't want to do the work to be one.
And that's always the key. I think the masses don't like to do the work for some reason.
No, well, because it's painful. We have to look at ourselves.
But no pain, no gain.
That's exactly right, which we'll talk about as well.
Oh, yeah, that might be one of the other elements.
Yes,
well,
it is.
Let's get Kurt in here because you actually met Viktor Frankl. Describe how you did that.
I was traveling throughout Europe back in the summer of 1976, and he was a chaplain at a Jewish synagogue at the Dachau concentration camp just outside of Munich. Mm. And he was just there for tourists like me who were just coming through to see what it was all about, what it was like. And so he was telling stories of things that happened. Later on, I got to meet him again here in the States when he came in. He was in the state of Michigan for some reason doing a series of lectures. And I got to meet him again and reminded him of having met him about a year or so before. Of course, he didn't remember me from a hole in a wall, you know, because he meets thousands on a average month. But it was very interesting, and what you said is so true, how he just had a different mindset than almost anything else. I mean, you walk into this place, and it just hits you like a thunderbolt, you know. Yes. what that place must have been like. And he was really very upbeat about the whole thing, even all those years later, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to kind of piggyback on what you were saying, you know, about this movement trying to say the Holocaust didn't happen, and it's just so bizarre because how can – there's so much evidence that it did, mm-hmm. you know. And I suppose to give those people at least a little bit of a break – it's the only thing I can think of is, you know, it is such an amazing time in our history, you know, of human history, not ours as Americans, obviously, but it's just so amazing that it happened. I mean, how can you conceive that it could happen? No, you guys must be making this up because it is just so off the wall, and yet it did. So it's just an amazing experience. My parents had taken me to Europe, and that was one thing they wanted to make sure that I experienced. Two things, actually, which was to go over into East Germany, into the Russian zone, which is an experience in and of itself. Mm-hmm. This is all before, of course, the wall coming down in 1989. But then also to go to a concentration camp. You will never forget that. Yes. Kind of an experience.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's an amazing stuff.
That is amazing, and that could be life-changing, I suspect, in itself, to see the
Absolutely.
Reality, because, you know, people complain when they have a broken nail, a flat tire. I mean, come on, try really
the
incredible.
Atrocities,
yeah.
The atrocities.
Can you believe
occurred?
That? Mm-hmm. People do that. Why?
Yes, yes. Well, because, you know, it's all in our perspective, and pain is relative.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And so, you know, it's...
Did you say pain is relative, or
yes.
Pain is a relative that
no.
we have?
Well, it might be.
Both, yeah.
Yes. But I think that's really, really powerful is that, you know, when Viktor Frankl is talking about thanking God for these things, we don't want to make it sound trite in thinking that he's being flippant, you know, in some way or minimizing, like in a state of weird denial. You know, oh, thank you, God, you know. What he's really saying is, I have to be able to find some form of goodness somewhere
mm-hmm.
in order to maintain being the person that you have created me to be, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And so he has to constantly, you know, be reframing the way that he's thinking to say, in the midst of these human atrocities where their evil is prevailing and seems to be winning, what am I going to do with my mindset so I don't lose the essence of my humanity and who God originally created me to be? Because the atrocities that were occurring were being, you know, disseminated by humans. And these humans, that's what we're saying, is they are certainly have given themselves over to something other than what they were originally created to be.
You know, and it's interesting you mentioned the concept of reframing. And, mm-hmm. and that's really... You know, from an NLP perspective, it's how can you reframe a situation from victim to empowerment?
That's right.
And people can do that. And mm-hmm. in fact, the listeners can probably do it right now, is simply ask, you know, what else could this mean?
Exactly.
And it's really pretty easy until you find the meaning.
And the hard part that we would like the listeners to understand is when Viktor Frankl was reframing, okay, when you or I have to reframe a tragic situation in our life, or ongoing prevailing hardship, we are not doing it in a way, you know, the sense of the human in that we will want to stay as a victim because it is so painful and so horrible what may be occurring to us that it takes that much more strength to say, okay, I'm willing to reframe this. And that is hard to do. It is not something that we go, oh, well, just change your mindset. You know, changing our mindset is a choice, absolutely. But actually, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, being willing to change your mindset is a very, very painful process, a very empowering process, and it requires tremendous strength. Now, the payoff is huge. Look at Viktor Frankl. He's off smiling, disseminating all kinds of hope all over the place in spite of what he endured. In fact, what's so great, the outcome was so great for him that what he endured all of a sudden seems small. Now, all of us can't imagine how something that big could appear small. But when we talk to people that have gone through trauma, one of the things I'm telling them is the whole work that you're going to do as you get over the trauma that have occurred to you, whether it be sexual abuse, physical abuse, you know, people stealing, whatever it was, you will, on the other side, be bigger than the trauma.
Oh, yes.
And that's the goal, because when you are in that kind of pain, the trauma is bigger than you. And so what Viktor Frankl was able to do was make the trauma he was enduring smaller than the goodness and the beauty and the righteousness of humanity that he was truly thinking on.
You know, and there was a, I think I've said this before, but there's a popular television show called Kung Fu. Remember, who was it? David Carradine,
yes.
I believe?
Yes.
And there was an episode I always remembered. The guy, what was his name? Grasshopper? Or whatever his name was. Oh, Grasshopper.
Yeah, you're right.
So he was in this igloo in the desert. It was like, it looked like an igloo. And and so this other guy was there with him. It's like, supposed to be like a little jail because the other guy did something wrong. David Carradine, I guess just because who he was, he got persecuted. So they're both sitting there. And the other guy that really did something wrong is really like all nervous and freaking out and can't sit still. And he goes, it's getting hot in here. You know, it's 110 degrees and it's going to get a lot hotter. And there's David Carradine, a little grasshopper, sitting there in a lotus position, so calm and serene.
That's right.
And he looks over to the guy and he says, you're not in the prison. The prison is within you.
Yes.
Is that interesting?
And that's Viktor Frankl.
That's what we're talking about, right?
Exactly right.
That's him.
Yes. And see, and it's really important for people to realize this is not easy. This is not easy. And so it's one of these things where I'm either going to be committed to doing that, which is one of our, when we talk about the third one, which is pain is inevitable. And so what Viktor Frankl worked on was saying, pain is inevitable. And great pain I will be experiencing for I don't know how long. So is my pain going to be in vain? Am I going to die a smaller person? Am I going to die a victim? Am I going to die in a way that means that my life and all that came before it was meaningless? Or is my pain going to be for gain?
Yes.
And his pain has tremendous gain for all of us.
Anyone who reads that book.
That's right. So his pain turned into great gain. And that's the choice that we have.
And he also suggests in the book that's why he survived. It
that's
looked
right.
like the people that they, you know, sadly put to the gas chambers were the ones that were weak, that have given up hope.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that was strong, maintained strength.
It's true.
And that is why he not only survived, but he flourished.
Right. Right,
because
part of the whole persecution and the abuse of the Holocaust was trying to make people weak.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, they were trying to reduce them down to the lowest common denominator of themselves.
In the Dachau concentration camp, when you go through some of the buildings that are kind of like what they call the museum, lots of photographs of the time, and the last thing you see before you walk out of the last building is a famous quotation saying, "Those who don't remember the past are doomed to repeat it."
That's right. And
that was one thing he said, that's one of the few things in this whole complex, now that it's a museum, that I disagree with. He said, you don't have to do it. It doesn't have to be this way. And that's why I'm here. I'm trying to explain that this does not have to happen again.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And as a 15-year-old, I remember something he had said to me when he was talking to our little group, whoever our group was at the time, and he was saying, you know, a lot of people are trying to make this go away. And
that's
it's
right.
not going to go away, especially for the Jewish people. It's not going to happen. He said, but what will cheapen us is when in the future, now this was literally 25 years ago that I was talking to him. He said, what will cheapen us more is when people use what happened here for political gain.
Right.
And now we hear, I don't know if I really remember that striking me at the time, But now that I'm older, and I'm not making any political statements on one side or the other, but you hear people saying, oh, this is as bad as Hitler was, or this is as bad as the Holocaust. And it's like, you clowns, you don't even have a clue as to how bad it was. You know, and I don't know how bad it was, even though I got to visit that place. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was really bad. You know, and he didn't want that to be cheapened. And that's really the way I've viewed it. When I hear that phrase, it's cheapening those Jewish people who
because
died.
Because then the pain is in vain.
Yeah.
And so the most important thing that you're saying is many of these people who are trying to eradicate the whole idea of the Holocaust and the
right.
experience, maybe we can, you know, I don't know them personally.
No, I don't.
But, you know, there's the possibility that a lot of that is what people do with pain is we want to deny it.
Sure.
And so it's too great, it's too bad, it's too ugly, it's too big of a scar, it's too bad of a... So we're just going to deny it because that makes us feel better. But what happens then is we repeat.
Right.
Because we don't learn from the pain. And the pain is then in vain.
And that's what Victor is trying so hard not to have happen
again. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in everyone's life, that's the key is really don't deny it, is really look at it, change it, because we all want everyone to be your best version.
Yes.
And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt, Match No Match. We'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt. We're talking about Be Your Own Best Version. We've talked about the incredible book, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, and we also talked about some of the steps of being your own best version. Of course, knowing that you have a purpose. What is your purpose? Your passion in life. And we did talk a little bit about the third step. Pain is inevitable.
Yes.
No pain, no gain, and you don't want to have pain in vain.
That's right.
I think. And
that's right.
Of course, it usually rains. Okay. Oh, I made that one up. That has nothing to do with anything. But wasn't it a famous Julie Andrews? What was that? The rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain. Okay. I don't know what that means.
Anyway, Sound of Music. Yes.
Oh, The Sound of Music. I knew Kurt would know. The second step, however. Let's go. Before we go to the second step, let's talk about denial, because we did talk about that. What is that for?
Well, you know, when we were talking about we don't want to be in denial of what's going on in our lives or the things that maybe need to change. What I was alluding to in the break is that we don't always want to see denial as a bad thing, because denial is a part of our psyche that enables us to handle things at a certain level until we were ready to handle what it really is. And so we are in denial about in a certain we are in some level of denial all the time somewhere. Because if we were completely out of denial and we would have to look at the world, other people, ourselves, truly the naked, real naked truth, what God really sees, we would not be managing well. I mean, I always say to clients, you know, if God revealed everything about me that needed to change all in one moment, I mean, there's no way I'd get out of bed. So I'm very thankful that he gives it to me in doses, you know. And so when denial is maladaptive or pathological, is when we are using denial to avoid the necessary change we need to make. Mm. Or we are using denial to avoid inevitable pain, where that pain may be the very thing that creates gain for us. And so Viktor Frankl is in some denial in the Holocaust in the prison camp because he can't look at it all the time, all the way. So there are some things that he is saying, I can't think on that. But he's not in such in pathological denial that he's unwilling to face the pain of how big this really is and what he needs to do, so he actually has choices. Because denial many times inhibits our choices.
So what you're saying is you can use denial as a tool to help you move forward.
Well, we can use it. If I'm actively in denial, that may not be denial. That may just be actively ignoring.
I got you.
Okay? Denial really is I'm not knowing I'm denying it.
Okay? Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So when I point out to somebody in session, you know, maybe they're describing a certain series of events to me, and I say back to them, this is what you're truly saying. This is what's really happening. And they'll say, well, that sounds really bad. And I'm like, well, it is. That's why you're here and that's why we're talking about it. So
you have sound effects in your therapy sessions.
So I'm, you know, generally sensitive and thoughtful, and I try not to do the hatchet approach, you know, to raking through someone's denial. But
because that could put them back in denial
exactly.
Real quick, right?
Yes, and see, denial is directly related to defense mechanisms, you know, and so they are defending us. Denial defends me from the reality of something I cannot handle. So, you know, we are in some level of denial many times about our loved ones, because if I am, that allows me to continue to have positive feelings about them, and stay connected and have some level of intimacy. Now, when denial is pathological, I am now denying something that's going to harm me, okay? If I'm denying, let's say my husband is alcoholic, if I deny that, okay, that's not healthy. See, because what that does is that causes me then to not face the pain that may cause me to change, that may cause me to be a better version of me, that may actually usher in change for that other person that's alcoholic. So if I am actively denying, okay, if I'm in denial about something that is that harmful, then I'm only ushering in more pain that is now going to be in vain. So now I'm in survival mode.
And you might be enabling the other person.
Oh, completely. Completely. And so I'm thinking I'm helping the other person by enabling them because I'm reducing their pain, but actually I'm increasing their pain.
Yeah.
Because they're staying now in a compromised state. So denial, we also see denial with sexual abuse. And many times there will be clients that they go through their whole entire life. They get to be 42, they get to be 55, and all of a sudden something happens and sexual abuse, repression, all these types of things, and they start falling apart because all of a sudden they're now dealing with all this trauma that they didn't know they had. And so what I explain to them is oftentimes our psyche keeps those things compartmentalized for us until it's safe enough to address it. As soon as it's safe enough to address it, and that usually means they have a supportive partner, okay? They may be at a particular age, they may have a particular amount of time, they may, you know, there may be a certain set of people that are now seen as a support team that they didn't realize are going to actively be that for them. So maybe they have a good relationship with a pastor, they have some good new friends, they've got a really supportive partner, and all of a sudden all the defenses start coming down and all this trauma starts coming up.
So it's very freeing is what you're
saying. It's very freeing. And that's when that denial, our psychology, our subconscious is working for us and pulls that down.
How about self-esteem and denial? I mean, I would think the lower the self-esteem, the more you might want to deny the reality.
Absolutely. Because that's ego strength.
Yeah.
So the more fragile my ego, the more I have to protect myself from pain, which means I have to be more in denial about everything.
And so you got to also pretend that something's greater than it is, perhaps.
Right, right. And that's that Pollyanna kind of thinking that is different than being optimistic.
That's a really good point.
Yes.
How do you get that point across to people whether they're really optimistic or they're having a different approach on
It all has to do with denial. See, if I'm just being like that quote-unquote Pollyanna, then I'm denying all kinds of things, which makes it impossible to have intimacy with somebody that's in that level of denial. Okay, how can I have intimacy with someone that can't even address what's right in front of their face?
Oh, that's a good
point. Because it's
too
painful, and so they're going to make it sound pretty and really minimize it, and they become more superficial and more shallow.
Yeah.
That's different than being optimistic that I say to a client, yeah, this looks really bad, but we've got lots of options. You have a lot of reserves within you don't even know you have. You know, I've got lots of hope, lots of faith. We will get through this, and it will be better.
Wow. So one of the answers or one way to look at this is really you shouldn't fear low self-esteem if you have it. You should really look at it as a blessing, a way to improve it so you can move on with your life and really have a much greater rewarding life.
Well, I think that's... Yes, I don't know if I would see low or a negative self-concept as something to be thankful for. I think I would be thankful for the awareness.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
yeah.
Now I'm aware of this.
Sense.
And so
sure.
I can be thankful for that awareness, even though it might cause me pain.
Yeah.
You know, I can say that pain, if I let it, will get me out of
right.
the deeper pain of a negative self-concept.
And you probably see that a lot.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, And that's sad, and I suspect that happens. It probably could happen at any time, but do you think the source of that is growing up and maybe didn't have a supportive parent?
I think that could have a lot to do with it. You know, one of the tragedies of Americans is with all that we have and all that we've accomplished and, you know, all the resources and how tremendously talented we are, we have a very low concept of ourselves. And you see that because of the way we take care of ourselves.
Wow, that's interesting.
And so a lot of, you know, that whole low negative self-concept has a lot to do with relationship.
And it probably, I suspect, has a lot to do how the media approaches advertising. And part of it, I'm thinking, is when you look at the media and how these external events try to build people up, whether it's perfume or certain attire.
Well, absolutely. See, but that goes back to this whole thing, that am I externally motivated or internally motivated?
Yeah.
So if I'm trying to get my self-concept from external things, you know, one of the reasons Americans have struggled with self-concept is because we are trained to be so performance-oriented, that I'm only as good as what I do.
Mm.
And so what I do, what I accomplish, what I own, people, places, and things, right? So if I'm that person that looks like that, acts like that, dresses like that, and then I go to all these wonderful cool places, you know, and I own all these cool places and all these cool things, right? Then I'm the person.
Yeah.
Instead of understanding that, no, the self-actualization, where the positive self-concept comes from, is my internal world. And it's about being a human being, not a human doing.
Yeah.
And so when you get into human doing, then your self-concept is going to always plummet because you will never be who you think you should be.
And if people don't agree with that, just look at some of the famous people like
That's right.
Elvis Presley, who
mm-hmm.
apparently from cultural standards had it all, but guess what? He was not happy.
That's right.
Well, it didn't do it for him.
Because the external world is not going to create the internal world that I need. I need to have my internal world in order so I manage the external world.
And that's the key. And that's the beauty, is to look to go inward. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's where certainly the empowerment is and the hope, because you can't control the outside world, but you can look deep within.
Yes, and you can control how you perceive the outside
Absolutely.
World. You can control how you react, and you can control what your effect is going to be.
And that gives the power back to you.
That's exactly right.
Which is excellent.
Yes.
I mean, why not?
Yes,
and
it's a much more efficient way.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a much more fearful, you know, it's fraught with a lot of fear when you have to go internal.
And it's like what you said earlier, because the responsibility now is on you.
That's right.
And you can't blame people anymore.
That's right.
People hate that. They go, wow, wait a minute.
Right.
I want to blame someone.
That's right.
Misery loves company. That was a TV show.
Was it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
One of my clients was the star of that. Anyway,
wow.
So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk about more about the second step, which is affect change in yourself. We started to
yes.
touch on that.
Yes.
But that's important, because that's where mm-hmm. the empowerment is, and that's what we talked about. Is affecting change in yourself, which will change your world.
Yes.
And what did we say off the air? As a man thinketh the...
As a man thinketh of him, so he is.
Yeah, so I think that's a great opportunity. So stay tuned. right after the 3 o'clock break. We will continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt. Be your own best version. We'll be right back.